Okay.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello. Hi, everybody.
Hello.
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 Yeah, we're on.
Okay.
Okay, very good. So, how did that go? Now how many, now let's see, has, press 1 if you found your emotional cause. See how we're doing. Do a little survey here. Press 2 if you're not sure or if you didn't. We have a couple people still holding out, but overall, it's pretty solid. People are finding emotional causation. So, okay, put the hands down now. What I want to do is those people who are having trouble, I suggest that what we're going to do is we're going to share the mailing list. If anybody doesn't want to share their email address, Devin, is that, should they email you or raise their hand maybe and you can jot it down, or what would you like them to do?
Yeah, you can email me at devin@quantumtouch.com. I don't know if I'll be have time to remember everybody who doesn't want to.
Yeah, though maybe if they just raise their hand now, if there's a few of them, you could just jot down.
Okay, if there's only a few, yeah, I can jot it down.
Okay, if you want to be able to work with other people in this group and be able to help each other figure out emotional cause, then you want to be on the mailing list. And we're not going to send any email out, but you can contact each other and work with each other freely. And if anybody doesn't want to share your email address, just hit a 1 right now, and if there's a, I don't see any hands going up yet. Okay, so no one say no to the list at this point, so that's fine.
Okay.
And so that means that if anybody is still having trouble, we'll find some volunteers who want to work with you later and help you find it. And by the way, it does happen once in a while that we don't hit a good solid emotional cause, but like I say, that's very rare that that occurs. So, moving right along. Anybody want to share your success and about what's been going on and what you discovered without going into the whole story, but just, you know, what happened? I'll just hit 1 and we'll talk to you for a moment. All right.
Okay, Zuhair. Well, hold on.
Just wanted to share an incident with my partner. I'm not going to name her because I haven't asked her permission. But it was very interesting because my partner suffers from an abscess in her mouth for the last year and can't seem to get rid of it. And we went through the process. And at the end, I don't know why, but I asked her, I said, where exactly in your mouth is this problem?
Right.
And she said, the bottom right. Through the series of questioning, it turned out that it was to do with her work a year ago. And what was the most interesting bit for me, which I asked her at the end, was where did you sit in relation to your work? And surprisingly, she sat on the right-hand side of her office on the bottom floor.
Interesting. Wow. Like I say, it's a hologram, and it just, and the patterns just express themselves and repeat themselves.
Yeah, and I thought that was really good. And, you know, something I think for the whole group to share with is very good.
Isn't it amazing that we can actually find these things? And generally, how easy
it is
to do that. Yeah.
Yes. And excellent.
Yeah, so that, the anybody else want to share a little tidbit like that? Because it's really interesting how that works. Any other hands coming up? Just hit 1 if you'd like to do that. Okay, I don't see anybody else wanting to share this stuff, although I find the stories really fascinating and valuable to come by. All right, let's go over here. All right. Let's see, must have it. Then. All right, so, I know where I put it. Okay, I'm sorry, I'm just kind of like looking around for where I have my next set of notes that I'm going to work from, and I know where I put them, and they're over here. Okay, good. So realize that this is step one of a 7-step process. And in the process of asking the person and you find that it fits, you know, what I often do is, what do you do with those emotions? And the people usually say, they're the ones I don't want to feel. And then I hand them the list and I say, well, maybe you're feeling them in your body instead of expressing them as emotions. Years ago, when I was doing a lot of consultations with this, I'd get to the point where I'd pass them the list and they were just kind of like mouth hanging open, amazed that they were able to link everything about their condition with emotions that they didn't want to experience. And that was quite a revelation for them. And then what I would often do is I'd say, well, this is instead of them actually doing the full processing, I just getting them started in a little bit. And I say, well, I'm just going to make some tea. Why don't you just let yourself feel these emotions around this issue? And they would. And then I come back 10, 15 minutes later with the tea, and I say, by the way, how are your symptoms now? And almost invariably, the symptoms would be about 30, 40% better, just from having started to feel the emotions. We have a hand up, Donna. Get you called on. Hello?
It's Orion.
Oh, Orion, okay. It's hard to read.
Yeah. I just wanted to mention that both me and my partner had a situation that went back to pre-birth. And,
wow.
And we did our best. Obviously, we attracted each other, but we're both kind of stymied with it. And
all right.
And
how do you know it was? How do you know it was pre-birth?
Well, I know my symptoms went back to pre-birth, and she said her symptoms went back to 1976, but she feels the emotions. She was clearer on what her emotions were. And she feels those went back to pre-birth. But
okay.
Me, I know that I was born with my symptoms. So.
Okay, so here's the deal. When you're dealing with something that goes back that far, I would look at the parents. Yes, maybe it happened before you were born, but the vibrations and the energy were from your parents.
Okay.
That's where I would look for the issues. Because
so them having the emotions and my having
well, you're reacting
that as a physical...
You're reacting to the emotional set of the household.
Okay.
You know, because when the household is going through a lot of turmoil and challenge and difficulty, you're going to feel it, right?
Yeah.
And then when you're born, you're going to be born with all this stuff, you know, the conflict between mom and dad or whatever it was, and then you're going to be in that environment as if it was raining on you constantly.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Then you're going to take on symptoms. And maybe you did pick up the symptoms pre-birth, but that doesn't really matter in a sense because that's your early life. That's the life you had with your parents. And so when you look to see and link together the specific emotions that you had around that condition and the emotions you had with your parents, because I don't want this to be too difficult because, you know, pre-birth, I didn't have any problems. I didn't have any issues to speak of. I didn't even have my awareness of self or identity or anything, except for past life stuff, and I'm not really going there right now. But we don't have to go that far down to find things. All we have to do is just see the patterns. And when you look at all the answers you have to the conditions, you'll see the resonance with your early life. And your home and your parents, why not?
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, well that's sort of what we tried to do and we mm-hmm. both kinda got stuck. So
wow, that's really unusual. What was the kind of condition you were dealing with?
Well, I was originally as an infant diagnosed with muscular dystrophy. It was
okay.
Later overturned, but I've had a lot of muscular weakness.
Yeah.
Yeah, and wasting and stuff all my life.
Right, okay.
Intermittently.
All right. And did you find resonant patterns with parents regarding that?
Because
of the emotions that you had?
Not too much.
Really?
Somewhat, but not too much. Like, yeah.
All right. Well,
I mean, I'd have to go into what emotions they were, and
exactly.
I don't know that. My mom's on the phone here with me. You know, she could answer,
okay.
but you know, don't want to take the time. So.
Right. Okay. Well, it's certainly worth exploring, and you know, like I say, the system hasn't been perfect, but it certainly works most all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's easier to see on other people, and perhaps over time, you know, it'll create more clarification for you.
Yeah, yeah. And maybe my mom, who's also on the in the course, you know, maybe we can work together a bit on it and see if we can.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know? It might be something more, you know, more available than you think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, very good.
Thank you.
You bet. So the first step in this process is the discovery. So if you look down on your notes, on the simplified note version, you see it says the discovery is number one. Then number two is the release. Three is insight. Four is remorse, etc. So let's talk about release work now. And the release work is to process out the intensity of the emotions that you felt that hadn't been dealt with previously. So essentially, and this is oversimplified, but it will take you a long, long way to being able to do this work. And that is to first look at the anger and the hurt as the two primary emotions that will express themselves. And, oh, by the way, it looks like we had a question. I wanted to make sure we have take care of that first before I jump too deeply into this.
Okay, Marja? Did you have a question?
Maybe no, I don't know what happened.
Okay, your hand was raised. That's all right. So we got that going. Okay, so we're going to look at releasing anger and releasing hurt. Now, what you often find within yourself or others is that some people are more comfortable expressing anger and some people are more comfortable expressing hurt. Some people can, you know, just feel more comfortable being, you know, in either state. Men generally, as a rule, but not always, feel more comfortable at first being angry, and women generally feel more comfortable being hurt. But the truth is that underneath the anger is a lot of hurt, and underneath the hurt is a lot of anger. So everybody needs to gain access to both sides of it. The hurt is more of a yin, and the anger is more of a yang expression, but that doesn't matter. We need to release both of them. Because especially the anger, when it's held inside, it's an active emotion, and it'll actively destroy your body. And you have to actively process it and go through it to get to the other side. So first I'll tell you about a hurt process to release hurt. And if you want to, I really encourage you, when you know the emotional cause and you want to work with it, to try to do all the homework tonight that I'm giving you and see if you can come out the other side. Generally in these classes, about a third of the class comes out with a massive shift of symptom just from having done the inner work. So here's a process for releasing hurt that's very effective. What you do is first you have to have a really clear picture of what the emotional situation was and have access to being able to feel that hurt. But once you have a clear picture and you know what the whole story is, this is very intense. What you do is you let yourself feel hurt for exactly 20 minutes, no longer, no shorter. But it's very hard to hold hurt feelings for a full 20 minutes, so you kind of have to force yourself to stay in it. Unplug the phone, set the timer, and just dive in. Now, for people who have a lot of hurt feelings, they think, oh, that's going to be really easy. But they'll find that for the first 2, 3, 4 minutes, it is pretty easy. But to hold that hurt feeling extended period of time, that's actually quite a challenging thing to do. So you force yourself to stay in the hurt feeling much longer than is comfortable, a full 20 minutes. But then at the end of the 20 minutes, that's when the most important part of this happens, which is that you nurture yourself for an entire hour after you're done. You nurture yourself. So that means that perhaps you read a book, take a walk, take a bath, go to a movie, wrap yourself in a blanket, just do something that you find really, maybe get a massage, do something you find very nurturing for yourself. This is really useful in a grieving process too, where somebody's just so sad and you don't think you'll ever get over it. Spend 20-minute increments where you feel the sadness and then nurture yourself for an hour. The wound, the hurt, is like a physical wound and it takes time to heal. And the way you give it that time is by feeling it fully. They say that the definition of detached emotion is being willing to feel the emotion so completely that you don't have to hold on to it anymore. And that's what this is about. Being willing to feel the emotion fully and completely so you can actually let it go. So that's a technique for releasing hurt. Another technique is for releasing anger. And this is really also quite valuable. The releasing anger technique is, there's a couple different variations that you can play with. One is not my favorite, but a lot of people like it a lot. It's where you write a letter. It's called a hate letter, and you're not going to mail it. It's just for the purpose of releasing the intensity of the emotion. And you write down everything that happened and how angry you felt as a result. Just really let that through. And then when you have expressed it as deeply and completely as you can, then you hide it. And the reason you're hiding it is because it's a metaphor of how you actually have hidden your own emotions from yourself. And by doing that, you hide the letter, and then the next day you come back and you find the letter again, you know, where you hid it, and you reread it very carefully and you try to make it even stronger. It's a little ritual of releasing the anger. And you hide it again. And then on the third day, you pull the letter out, you read it, you feel it intensely, and then, this is the most challenging part of the exercise, is you burn the letter. And when you burn the letter, that way, it's sort of making a commitment that you're releasing the emotion to fire. It's a little ritual. Do it safely. Don't burn down your house. Then you'll be angry at me. And don't want that to happen. So release the emotion, and then you can be on the other side of it. Then for the approach I tend to like a little better, or a lot better than that one actually, is a multi-stage process. And this one for releasing anger, which again is part of the release process, is that let me just back up a second. If you had a situation that happened 4 months ago, 4 years ago, or 40 years ago, it doesn't really matter. You don't want to process it as the person you are today. You want to process it as the person you were then. So if it happened when you were 6 years old, you don't want to be the adult processing it because you forgave mom and dad a long time ago, but the issue is not there for the adult to process. You need to be the actual child. So what I recommend is you go into a meditation and you imagine that you are falling backwards. And that's a metaphor for going back in time. And when you go back in time into that space, what you do is you return and become the person who was experiencing that pain. And you play it through the first time the way it really happened. So if you have written a whole series of events that happened at that moment or that series of events that caused you that pain, you actually play it through each one after another. And you can bring yourself there as the adult watching you and helping you. So you play it through as it really happened. And this is akin to pulling the bow back of a bow and arrow. That if you pull the bow back really far, the arrow can travel a long way. So you want to feel as much intensity as you can around the issue. That's step one of the releasing anger. Step two is you want to play it through the way you would have liked to have expressed it. And you have your adult there to protect you if somebody wouldn't like you saying what's true for you. And you express that intensity and you get it out of your system. And you can scream and you can yell. Now, you don't have to do this out loud. In the meditations they've given you, you can scream in a meditation without anybody hearing a thing. You can do it silently inside yourself. You don't have to scare the neighbors. You can just do it within yourself. And you release as much intensity as you can by expressing it the way you would have liked to. And if you feel the need to be physically violent in the meditation, that's okay because you're not really intending to hurt the person. You're just trying to get the feelings out of your system. If you do it well, you might even find yourself sweating because you want to feel it as real as you can and to get that through your system. Okay? Then the third step, after you've expressed and released it as fully as you can, then the third step is where the parent listens and cares. And in the listening and caring, that part is not always very easy for people because sometimes what will happen is you'll want to be expressing your feelings to this person and they just don't have any capacity to listen and care. And there's a way around that in the meditation where what you do is you imagine there's a shell around them, which is really like their persona. And you, with your love, that shell starts to crack. It starts to break apart and fall away. And then underneath is the beautiful person that was underneath that really did listen and care. So if you were saying to a friend or a parent or whoever it was, or an ex-spouse, and you express that intense emotion, and they're listening and caring, and say, I see how much I really hurt you, and I'm so sorry that I did that. You get that emotion through. And the fourth step of after you feel listened and cared to, then you create a new past. And in that new past, you create it how you wanted it to have been, how you wanted it to have been instead of how it actually was. So you've let yourself have it play out a different way. And some people don't think it's legal to create a new past. And it's absolutely legal. It's a wonderful thing to do because it gives you a lot more space and a lot more freedom. Now, that's hurt and anger in the release. Another thing that needs to be released is guilt. But guilt is a special situation. Guilt is not a real emotion. Guilt is a synthetic emotion. Guilt is not, it cannot be processed as other emotions are processed. Guilt needs to be turned into its native anger, and then it can be released. Because guilt is actually anger that we feel we have no right to have. So an example I've used before, and I really think this is a good example, if you were driving a car down the nice neighborhood street, you know, driving a nice, safe, you know, maybe 20 miles an hour, not speeding or anything, just driving very casually, and all of a sudden from nowhere, a dog runs under your tire, you've killed the dog, the family is outside crying, their dead dog, and you're there, and you feel terribly guilty. And I've asked this question of many groups, and I say, why are you angry? And some people say, well, I'm angry I killed the dog. Yeah, that's true. But why else are you angry? Well, and a lot of people have a lot of trouble answering that question because they imagine themselves feeling so guilty right off the top that they don't have all the other kinds of anger that they might be feeling. But to give you some ideas, you might be angry they didn't tie up their dog. You may be angry that you had other plans and now you have to take care of their feelings. You may be angry that you don't like hurting dogs and you're angry at the dog. Now, you have no right to be angry at the dog, but you could be. You could be angry at the dog. You could be angry that this has interrupted your day and now you have to deal with all these people who are upset with you. There's a whole lot of reasons in that situation that you could be angry. But what most people do is they let the guilt take over the whole situation. And the guilt becomes overwhelming, and so they don't let themselves feel the intensity of that emotion, and as a result, it does not get released or get processed. And that's really damaging when that happens that way. So, how to deal with guilt? Turn it into anger. There's the issue of depression, and you can't really process depression, but for another reason, it's actually quite similar. Depression is, in most cases, not always, but most cases, is anger that a person feels they'll get in trouble for expressing. So, and it's often so buried in deep depression that a person doesn't have access to it. But that's where it has to go. It has to go into the release of anger. Now, a couple of our self-created health coaches were working with a woman who had like severe depression for about 6 or 8 years. And they had been coaching her for a long time, and she really wasn't making any progress. Then they took the self-created health class, and they helped her in session number one. They helped her find the emotional cause of her depression. And they helped her go through processes of releasing that anger that was at cause of the depression. And that worked out pretty well. Then she came back for session two. And in session two, which is what we're going to cover right after we're done with all the emotions, she got into the remorse and the forgiveness. And when she came through the other side, she didn't have the depression anymore. And she was like in this completely different person who was just filled with joy. Okay, any questions so far about stuff that I've been covering? Just raise your hand and we'll talk about these issues. Okay, we got some hands.
Okay. Dorian?
Yeah, hi. I actually had a question from before, and I
sure.
don't know. We don't have to deal with it necessarily right
no,
now, but when you were talking, the person who had asked before about the pre-birth experiences,
yeah,
and I just was wondering, wouldn't it be, if he or they had gotten in touch with the emotion that was pre-birth, if they were in touch with that, wouldn't it still be able to be worked through?
Sure, yeah, you know, of course. And yeah. what you see is that these things don't happen in a vacuum. And there's other things in your life that reinforce that constantly. And so you look for the issues, and maybe it was a past life or maybe it was pre-birth. It doesn't matter in a sense because there's enough clues in this lifetime to work on them.
Yeah, okay. And there's probably stronger because they're real things you can connect with. Maybe.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You'll find something very directly and then you can work with it.
Okay.
Yeah, good.
Okay, Annie.
Yes, my question is, what about weight gain?
What about it?
Can this be used to
of
help
course.
Somebody figure out, okay?
Yes, and what has often been found, and I don't like generalizations too much because they're not always true, but what happens to people in weight gain is, if you look at the metaphor of weight, it's in a sense, it's insulation, isn't it?
Yes.
And what's it insulating you from? What would happen if the person didn't have the weight? Well, for a lot of women I've talked to, there would be so much of sexual attention, they would be uncomfortable.
Okay.
And that's not always the case, but I've seen it an awful lot where it's a way of keeping people at a distance. It's a way of insulating oneself. It's a way of protecting oneself. And
okay, or happens to going back to when the weight gain first started.
Well, yeah, and to see what it is. But you see, when you look at the emotions you have because the weight is there, then, you know, and you see, you know, what other metaphors are coming up, what other emotions are there, and what it keeps you from doing. Just go through all the questions. And that's what's so fascinating about this work, is that you can actually use it to do detective work on all kinds of reality creation.
Excellent. Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah. Okay, who else do we have?
Okay, we have Ed.
Hey, Ed.
Hello?
Hello, Ed.
Okay, let's try Ava.
Oh,
Ava?
It's Eva here. Yes,
Eva.
I had a question.
Huh?
When you were talking about hurt, you said that you get in touch visualizing with the person that has hurt you.
Uh-huh.
And see if, you know, you can make that person feel that they regret it or get some response there. What is the situation if the hurt was caused by something that happens in the war, that's not a person, but
okay.
You were
so,
hurt because of a situation that
so you can be
like an
angry.
Thing.
You can be angry at the war. You can be furious at the war. You can
be
terribly hurt because of the war.
But you cannot get in touch with anybody that you can
No, there's no person there. But what you can do is you can anthropomorphize the whole being of war. You're yelling at the whole stupidity of war. All the idiots who created the war, who's paid for it. All the crazy people who signed up to join it and the poor victims who got slaughtered by it. You can be angry and hurt about all of that without it being a person. In other words, I guess if I'm generalizing, you can have intense emotion without anybody giving you permission to do that, without having to have the logic of saying, oh, yeah, well, there's no person to be angry at, so you can't be angry. No, there's no person to be angry at, but you can be as angry as you like.
Okay.
And as angry as you need to be, because I can't hardly think of anything stupider than war.
True enough.
True enough.
And certainly hurtful. But there is no person that you can go to that, why did you do this?
So see war as like, you know, an amorphous being or something, and just get angry at war.
Right.
Get angry at the leaders.
Okay.
Get angry at the whole society that created this stupidity, this massive insanity they call war.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Yeah.
That's a good answer.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're going to try Ed again.
Ed, are you there? He's on break or something, so let's move on.
Ed?
Hello?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can now. Good.
Okay, great. Thanks. I have phone problems. What's the relation between the emotional cause you find in the first step with the anger, hurt, et cetera, from the second step?
Well, the emotional cause has feelings that we haven't released. That's why it's still there. You know,
okay.
So, you know, a baby, you hand him a lollipop, and he's happy, and you take the lollipop away, he cries, but then give him a balloon, he's happy again. That's because the child feels the emotion so completely they don't hang on to it later. All the physical conditions and the emotions that we found originally are going to be broken down into a number of different feelings that we have, primary emotions. And then when we learn to release those emotions, then that frees us up to do the next five steps of the process. So we're in step two now of the release.
So I guess I'm missing one thing here.
Sure.
So if you come up, like in my case, I come up with despair, I think, as the first step.
Okay, so despair around a certain person or situation?
Yeah, around a certain situation.
Okay, and just think how much anger there is under the despair.
Okay.
And just think how much rage there is that you've been put into a space where you felt despair.
Okay.
So you need to release both sides, the yang outer expression and the inner sadness of having that much despair. So you need to do both processes.
I see. That totally clarifies it. Thank you.
Good. You're very welcome. Anybody else, Devin?
Yeah, hold on. Jyoti.
Hi. My question is releasing anger, the first technique. Day one, you write a letter and express it as deeply as possible. Then second day, then hide it and come back the next day and reread it, make it very stronger, and then burn it immediately the next
day? On the third day.
On the third day,
you reread it very carefully, you feel it, and you just, and you say, okay, I'll tell you a funny story. A friend of mine, I gave him this technique years ago, and he wrote the letter, and then he rewrote the letter, and then he pulled it out a third day and just made it even stronger. And then when it came time to burn,
okay,
he said, I'm not going to burn that. I put a lot of energy into that. I put a lot of time and thought into that letter. I want to keep that letter. But that was an expression of wanting to keep the anger, too. And so that's how it works. We're very invested in our emotions and in our anger. And so we want to keep that emotion. And we don't release it.
Perfect. Thank you.
So it's important to burn it. That's the most important step of that process, is to actually burn the letter, because we put so much time and energy into building it up to the way it is. So we've gone through a process of releasing hurt, of releasing anger. And you've gone through the expressing the emotions the way that happened, expressing the way you would have liked to have expressed it, having the person listening and caring, and then creating a new past. And creating a new past is really powerful. It really does a lot of stuff. We talked about the guilt and turning that back into its native anger. We talked about the depression and turning that back into its native anger. I had a teacher years ago suggest that all physical illness has at its root suppressed anger, that anger is an active emotion, and if you don't release it actively, it will express itself covertly through your body, your relationships, your health, everything else, your successes or lack thereof. So it's vitally important to get that out of your system. Another really big set of emotions that people experience is shame. And shame is when you are made to feel subhuman. No child ever felt ashamed of their nakedness. Someone had to teach you to feel that way, teach you to feel subhuman. And that's why it's so hard for people to process child, adolescent, or adult shame, because it isn't really yours, not your emotion. And therefore, it's very hard to get at and to deal with in a direct manner. The best thing that can be done with shame is perhaps to imagine it as like a big bag of, well, I'll say it, crap. It's not yours. And what you want to do is get angry that it's there in your life. It's affecting you. And you want to give it back to whoever it belongs to. You know, mom, dad, this does not belong to me. I refuse it. I'm giving it back to you. Boom, and you hand it back. That is a powerful way of dealing with the shame. You need to get in touch with what the shame was and give it back. So these aren't like completely original techniques for releasing emotion. And there's all kinds of gestalt and other methods for releasing intensity. And so these are excellent ones to work with. And if you know of any others that you like to do, I encourage those as well, because the release is only step two. And then we move on from there. Any questions about what I've just been talking about before we move on? Because I want to make sure everybody's up to speed before we move forward. Press one if you've got any questions. Okay,
we have Dorian.
Okay, Richard, so if you have shame, would anger be underneath that? Are you saying?
Yes, lots
okay.
of anger. And so
all
what
right.
you want to do is imagine you've got this big bag of shame. It's all rotted and smelly and horrible. And give it back to who handed it to you. This isn't mm-hmm. mine. This is yours. I'm giving it back to you. Bam. That's
okay,
how...
Then do you go through the anger release at that point after that?
I think you can be expressing the anger when you're giving it back.
Okay, all right.
And if there's more anger and other issues around that, you can certainly spend the time and do a full anger process as well. But to get rid of the shame, you just want to declare and understand this is not yours. You can be angry at them for giving you the shame. Yes, that's a real big anger. But for the actual shame itself, you just want to give it back. And realize that this isn't yours. It never was yours. You just took it on.
Okay, thanks.
You're welcome. All right.
Okay, we have Suki.
Hi. If one's insulating oneself with fat against relationships, how does one deal with that?
Okay, I missed a couple words. If you're doing what?
Insulating oneself.
Oh, insulating yourself.
Yes.
Well, what you have to do is you have to start removing the insulation and feel the intensity of the emotion.
And would that be the fear of a relationship?
The which relationship?
Or
the fear.
It could be, but
the main thing is to dive down and find out what it is. And then deal with the actual emotion that's inside there. So what happens with fear, and this is really important, when a person experiences fear, like worry, for example, worrying is anticipating anger in the future. Right?
Yes.
So I'm worried that, you know, I'll be fired. Okay. So I'm anticipating that I'm going to be angry, and so now I'm going to be upset and afraid that I'm going to be angry about it. So the way you deal with fear is, well, there's a couple different ways, but first off, you want to realize that you're already feeling other emotion besides the fear. You may be feeling anger or anticipating hurt, and you can start working to release those things. Another thing is if it's a very serious situation where, you know, you could be thrown out in the street or something really bad can happen, a lot of times it just helps to have a plan, you know, plan C. Like, what would I do if worst case scenario happens, and you plan around the worst that could happen and you know you'd be okay even if the worst happened. And then you can deal with it more fully when you know you don't have to try to think of what the worst would be. That's it. For worst case scenario. But generally, you can release the emotion that is generating the fear. I'm afraid I'll be rejected, or I'm afraid I'll lose a job, or I'm afraid my house will burn down, or whatever it is. Something will happen to my kids. You can express that intense emotion that you are using to generate the fear. So what I'm saying is take it out of fear, take it out of depression, take it out of guilt, and find out what the real emotions are underneath those and try to release the intensity of those emotions. Okay?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, you bet. We have one more, I think?
Okay, Judy,
more.
We have two more, yeah.
Okay.
Hi, Richard.
Hi.
Hi, Devin. I want to first thank you guys for making this available, and let you know I'm very excited about the work.
Excellent.
A question about shame. When you started talking about that, I could think of two or three people that kind of popped up all at once.
Yeah.
And was wondering if you feel it's more effective to work with each of those individually, or can I put them in a group and just throw that big bag of crap at all of them at once?
Well, you know, I'd say try it both ways and see which works better for you. I would first think off the top one at a time so you can have the full experience of it. But, you know, it could be just as effective to do it at once if you can. But notice how you feel afterwards. And if you feel more satisfied doing them one at a time, then do it that way. And if you feel really fantastic doing them all at once, that's great too. It's kind of like you're the monitor. You know, when you read a passage of truth, the way you know it is because it lights you up inside and you go, oh, that really makes sense. I can feel that, the truth of that thing I read. Well, it's similar with this. You know it when you feel it. You know it when it works. And so go in there and find out what's true for you and work with that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay, we have Michael.
Hi, Richard. Thank you for already answering my question that I haven't even put. It was about fear, but you answered it in great detail, so my question is answered. Thank you very much.
Okay, you're very welcome. Glad I got to it. Okay, so the release, as I mentioned, is not original in that a lot of people are doing release work. Gestalt work is a lot about release. And I did a lot of Gestalt work when I was in college. And, oh, man, it felt so good to have that cathartic expression, but it didn't change anything. And so I realized it was valuable, but it certainly wasn't the bigger answer. That's because they left out five more steps. And that's what we're going to cover now, is the other five steps after the release. The third step is really important. It's called the insight. And the third step is the one a lot of people jump to and get themselves in big trouble. And what I mean by that is, okay, I was taking a trip and I did some counseling for some people when I was on the trip, and the two women I counseled that day were doing exactly the same thing. They realized they were creating a situation in their life that they were somehow responsible for. But they didn't know why they created it. They didn't have the discovery step. And they hadn't done the release. So all they were left with was the insight. I'm creating this. I'm doing this to me. And they would just beat themselves up forever because they didn't know how they got there. There's a lot of medical people who get very angry at the idea of self-created health because they think it means that I'm blaming the victim. And so the person's just going to blame themselves for having gotten sick, and there's no positive side to this problem of them blaming themselves. And why am I making it worse by getting them to beat themselves up? And that's what the objection is. And I would have the same objection, too, if that was the only step, but it isn't. After the discovery and the release, then the insight is the most important step. But I really never recommend trying to go to insight before you've done discovery and release because it's destructive at that point. And if it's done in order, these things are incredibly constructive. Take them out of order and it can hurt you. The insight is the realization that I'm doing this to me. And the way that works is when you look at what this person did to you that has been causing you all this pain, and then you realize that you may be treating yourself that way or you may be treating others that way. Case in point. So a person who is very upset about being rejected, well, I don't reject myself. Really? So when you feel rejected, how much love do you give to yourself? Oh, I abandon me when I feel abandoned. Well, that's interesting. And you can look at it that way with virtually any kind of issue and realize that when somebody has mistreated you and it's really inside your system, That is how you end up treating yourself. And for many people, you'll end up doing it to someone else. I think it's part of the reason, you know, shame gets passed on from generation to generation. Somebody's abusive and then somebody else becomes an abuser and so forth. And the way to break the cycle is to do the last steps of the process. The third one is that insight. Wow, I've been blaming you for doing this thing to me, but that's exactly how I treat myself when I'm upset. That's exactly how I treat myself, and that's how I treat other people sometimes too. For some people that's true, for others it isn't. But you need to look at it, turn it around. They did this to me. Ask yourself the question, am I doing this to me? Did I do this to me? Well, maybe when you're feeling really bad, that is how you treat yourself. And that is the big insight. If you do it well, you can access this insight very, very powerfully. When you access that insight, if you do it really well, you will feel tremendous remorse, which is the fourth step, and it's an automatic step. One man in Japan said to me during the seminar, he said, I feel unforgivable. Wow, that's powerful. That's really good, because he's pulled that bow back so far, when he lets it go, he can go a long way. And by the way, at that seminar, he did do the healing on his unforgivable identity and became this amazingly joyous, loving being as a result of being able to go there. But if you can go into the insight and realize you did this to yourself, then comes the one of the most important steps, number four, of really feeling the depth of remorse. Oh my God, I've been blaming everybody else for how I treat myself and maybe how I've treated other people too, and to really feel bad about it. Now, what's the difference between remorse and guilt? Important question here. Guilt has no responsibility to it. Remorse is a healthy reaction to realizing that you've hurt somebody. And remorse also has compassion in it. Oh my God, I've really hurt you, and I care about your feelings, and I want to make things right. That's where remorse goes. Remorse is a very healthy reaction to having done something wrong. And if somebody, you know, it's all the psychopaths out there who make us feel crazy and terrible. They're all the villains in the movies, and they don't have any remorse when they hurt you. That's what makes them villains. But when somebody says, I see how deeply I've hurt you, and I am so sorry, and they mean it, and they're never going to do it again. How do you know? Because they care so much about having made a mistake and done something terrible that they're so real in their feeling that they would not let themselves do that again because they care. That is what remorse is really about. And so if you turn it around, okay, this is what they did to me. They abused me. Well, how do I abuse myself? They hurt me in this way. Well, how do I hurt myself? And realize that I end up doing this to myself and maybe other people. When you really let yourself feel that remorse powerfully and deeply, see how far you can go into the remorse. It usually takes less than 10 minutes. It isn't like you have to spend all day and, you know, wear a hair shirt and beat yourself up or something stupid. It's just letting yourself feel the intensity of having hurt yourself profoundly. That's what the remorse is about. Once you've done that, then you're ready for the forgiveness. Now, how deeply can you forgive something if you don't feel any remorse? Not at all. There's just nothing there to forgive. It's like, well, you ever hear these false, hollow apologies? Well, you know, if I've hurt you in any way, I'm terribly sorry. What do you mean, if? Right? It's this disclaimer. What they're saying is, I don't really believe I hurt you, but if you insist on saying that I did hurt you, I'll agree that you were hurt, but I don't really, you know, I have no emotional attachment, and if I've hurt you, well, then I apologize. But since I don't believe I hurt you, I'm not really apologizing. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the depth of feeling that remorse. And when that depth is there, then when you pull the bow back and do the forgiveness, it goes a long, long way. So I tried out a whole lot of forgiveness techniques, and what I came across was an original way of using what they call Ho'oponopono. And many of you have probably heard of this. I'm sorry, please forgive me, I love you. And what this guy who had developed the Ho'opono did was he would just repeat it over and over again, and he helped transform a mental institution into a very healthy place for people to be by just realizing on some level he was creating this reality. And they teach it that way, where you just keep repeating, I'm sorry, please forgive me, I love you, and so forth. And it just felt so hollow to me that I couldn't use it that way. But I've came up with a variant of it that is very powerful and very effective. And it goes like this. When you're having a conversation with yourself, who are you talking to? Interesting question. You're talking to yourself. Well, who's that? Well, it's the one you're talking to. So for the purpose of forgiving yourself, it helps to personify yourself. And you can do this either in front of a mirror, or you can imagine it's you you're talking to, like an arm's length in front of you. And if you're really feeling that depth of remorse, now you're ready for that forgiveness. And you start by saying to the other, you can do this out loud or in your head, but you want to be very clear and don't try to go fast. You say to the other, I'm sorry, please forgive me. And the other takes it in and says back to you, I'm so sorry, please forgive me. Go back and forth, saying that over and over again, I'm sorry, please forgive me. And the other one saying, I'm so sorry, please forgive me. And then, after 3, 4, 5, 6 minutes of this, going back and forth saying, I'm sorry, please forgive me, if you don't feel a little shift, take a chance and say the next version of it. And you say to the other, I'm sorry, please forgive me. I'm sorry, I'm just getting my notes wrong. It's, I'm sorry, please forgive me, I love you, is what you're saying over and over again. And they're saying back to you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, I love you. And you're going back and forth saying, I'm sorry, please forgive me, I love you, back and forth. Then when you're ready, you say, please forgive me. I'm sorry, you say, okay, I'm just getting my notes all screwed up right now. You say, I love you, I forgive you. And they're still saying, I'm sorry, please forgive me, I love you. And you say, I love you, I forgive you. That's step two. First, you're both saying, I'm sorry, please forgive me, I love you. Then one of you says, I love you, I forgive you. And the other one's not ready to say that yet. And then that switches, and you're both saying, I love you, I forgive you. You're going back and forth saying, I love you, I forgive you. And then that eventually switches at your own pace, and it becomes, I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you. And that's how it ends, in that I love you vibration back and forth. Now, what happens for those people who do this well is that the I love you becomes so powerful and so strong, you can no longer contain it anymore. The self-love is out of control, and it turns into what I'll call spiritual self-love, the seventh step of the process. So once you get to remorse, you know, and when you get through forgiveness, man, it's just, you're just flying. You're just flying to the end, to the finish line here. And you go into the I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you space, and then it's pure magic. And then that's when people realize that the symptoms have gone and they even feel grateful for having had the condition because it showed them how they had stopped loving. And that's the process, essentially. Is you take it all the way from the discovery to the self-love, in that order. Discovery, release, insight, remorse, forgiveness, self-love, and then spiritual self-love. Okay, any questions about this part of it? Just raise your hand with a one if you've got any questions. Well, very good. I must have done a good job, or else the phones aren't working. Anybody want to talk about anything right now and discuss anything? Very. Okay, we have a hand up.
Okay, Margaret, go ahead.
Hi. You know, I'm calling as a body worker.
Sure.
And I guess I had a question of scope of practice, because we're dealing with emotions and
yes.
stuff like that. So can you say anything about that?
I think that what this becomes, we're looking at actually creating a new category,
uh-huh.
which would be it's called a coach.
Okay.
And so we create self-created health coaches, and we'll create a certification eventually or
okay.
soon around people being coaches. You're not an official, you know, marriage, family counselor type of thing or license, but you'd just be a coach, an emotional healing coach.
Okay,
thank you. And so that would be the category.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, Annette?
My question is, what time is the healing coach, you call just called it, present? In step one, that's clear, but towards the end?
Okay, so here's what different people are doing, and we're still discovering the best ways to work it because this is pretty new stuff, is that like the women who worked with the depression, what they did was they helped her with the discovery, and then they gave her homework for the release. And you could either do that release work with them present if that's to your inclination, or they can go home and do the release work by themselves. Then, when she came back for another session, they worked with insight, and they found that she was doing this to herself, and she was able to feel the intense remorse. And then, when they tried to get her into forgiveness during that same session, she said, "I can't possibly do this. It's too painful. I can't possibly go there. It hurts too much." And they said, "No, you can. Just stay with it, you know." And after about 10 minutes, she was able to actually go into forgiveness. And then, you know, it's sort of a little bit of hand-holding, but it can be done. I recently was called into a documentary where some people are filming, and some Hollywood actress had her heart broken, and so they thought they'd make a documentary about a broken heart. And they've seen all these people and, you know, trying to help her with her broken heart. And in about 4 or 5 minutes, we found exactly why she had a broken heart. Because her boyfriend did exactly what her last boyfriend did, which is exactly what her mom and dad had done to her. So that's where it came in. So I gave her homework to do, to release the intensity of those emotions. And then when I see her again, I'll walk her through the insight and the remorse and the forgiveness, which will lead to the self-love. And so I think it can be broken down into two steps, unless you want to spend a lot of time with somebody while they're doing their processing. So that's generally how I'd work it. But what I'm looking forward to is people discovering the best possible protocols that they can use. And from those protocols, they can then find out what works best.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. I think this is Orion.
Yeah, good guess. Just going back to my earlier question, I know my partner was also saying this, and we're just kind of wondering, I don't know how the course is going to go and if we're going to actually continue working through this process, but I'm wondering if there's any possibility of getting a little help through the process.
Yeah, I think what we're doing is we're kind of winding this down. Maybe we'll have time to actually try this with you right now. Or in a few minutes.
Okay.
So let's do that, because we're moving through the material a little faster than I anticipated. We've got a little extra time, so that's good.
Oh, sweet. Okay.
Yeah, so hang in there, and we'll see if I can figure some stuff out with you. All right?
Awesome.
Okay, Annie?
Thank you, Devin. I'm going back to the weight thing. I work in a doctor's office,
yeah.
And we have a number of women, some men too, who are overweight, and
right.
Of course there are medications and that type of thing, but they're continually trying to lose weight. So what I'm trying to figure out is, I understand what you're saying when you say the insulation thing. Some of them, myself included, I've noticed in the past, month and a half, 2 months, that I've put on like 6 pounds, which doesn't sound like a lot, but to me it's a lot.
Yeah.
And while we've been doing this, I'm trying to look back to what may have triggered that, and I can't come up with anything.
Well, not everything is going to show up easily, but what you can do is, when something has a lot of emotion to it, then it's easier to work with. Now, I know people who have gotten rid of all processed food, eat 90% raw food, and they, you know, and they drink a lot of green juice from vegetables and stuff, and their weight just falls off. And so there's physical aspects to it too, and the amount of exercise, and you know, that's the logical side of things. But when something has a lot of emotion behind it, not 6 pounds, but I mean a lot of emotion, like, you know, 150 pounds, then that's when it's really easy to find the stuff. But when it's just, well, I don't like it, bothers me, it's really hard to find the issue there. Unless there's some very strong judgment or strong emotion around it, then it's easier.
Okay, that's where I need to look for some of this stuff. Okay, thank you, Richard, that's what I was looking for.
Yeah,
okay.
And on each one of those people with the weight problems, they have their own separate emotional issues, and quite amazingly, those issues they feel around their own weight are exactly the cause of the weight on an emotional level.
Okay.
Yeah, that's why we can't generalize too much about that stuff.
Yeah, yes, unfortunately. So
right.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Okay, Natalie?
Great, hi.
Hi.
I am looking at the insight part of this.
Yeah.
And it seems that if we're working with anger and hurt, then we're going to be blaming someone for that.
Well, that's
so
on the release. The release is we're expressing the intense anger towards someone else, yes.
Right. So I guess I'm just concerned that just asking how am I doing this to me, is that really enough to get the insight? You know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's like,
okay.
do you do this to yourself or to other people or both? And when if you generalize and say, what did the other person do wrong? You know, they were judging you, or they were mean, or whatever it was. You know, say, well, am I ever that way to me? Oh,
okay.
Yeah, I do that to me. When do you do that? When I'm feeling hurt, when I'm feeling, you know, whatever. And that's when you can pull up the insight, and then you can actually start talking to yourself about the insight and saying, wow, I'm expecting people to treat me in a way I don't even treat myself.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And that will build up the insight, which will automatically turn into the remorse.
Okay. So it sounds like we're actually internalizing the actions. So
all along.
Yeah.
We've always internalized it. So if dad locked you in the closet and you've been feeling really miserable on some level, then your body carries that emotion, and then the symptoms show up, and you release the anger, you get that out of your system as best possible, then you have the insight that you've been locking yourself up in the closet.
Okay.
And then you release that through forgiveness and self-love.
Okay.
But you don't want to do, here's something I hadn't mentioned, you don't really want to do self-anger. That's not helpful.
Right.
And if you do need to do self-anger, make sure you've released all of the anger toward everybody else first. And then when you do need to feel some self-anger, which does happen sometimes, you want to keep it at least 50-50, 50% compassion and 50% anger. Yes, you did mess up here, but you understand why and you're compassionate about it at the same time.
Right.
So you don't want to just, that's why it's so hard for a person who has not gone through the process to deal with their own self-anger, because it's overwhelming. Like I say, it's like trying to swallow a basketball. You just can't do it.
Yeah. So you're saying if there is self-anger, go apply it to everyone else as much as possible.
Yes.
Then go ahead and accept your part, but also have compassion.
Yeah, at least 50-50% compassion with the anger. So, yes, I know I did this, and I know I really hurt myself, and I'm very angry I did this to myself, but I know why, and I'm feeling a lot of love and compassion that, you know, I acted out in this way.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's more tools. That's good. I was concerned about denial, you know, where the insight part goes, that people wouldn't really be able to look at how they're doing it to themselves.
Well,
or myself.
it really hasn't been a problem, because
when
you realize that they did this to you, then you start searching, well, do I ever do that to me? So like a very simple example is rejection. Well, he or she rejected me. Well, do I ever reject me? Ooh.
Okay.
You know, and then you start seeing, yeah. So when I'm feeling rejected, how much love am I giving myself?
Right. Right.
None.
Okay.
Okay, there it is.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, Allison.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you, Richard and Devin, for doing this. This is great.
Sure.
You, at the beginning this morning, mentioned you can apply this to, like, financial issues or your pocketbook.
Yeah.
Do we just look for how we feel about finances?
Ask yourself the discovery questions. You know, what emotions, what are the symptoms, what emotions do you feel as a result of having these conditions, what judgments do you have about it, what does it keep you from doing, you know, so forth. And you'll often find some really big insights about it.
Mm. Okay, so how do I feel about being broke? How do I we're right. Okay. Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. What judgments do you have? And then see if it is about anybody else in your reality. See if there's some, you know, some situation where you were led to feel helpless or whatever the issue was, where you can express and release those intensities of emotion.
And so do you find you have underlying themes that come up? Like
everybody does. Yeah.
Right.
Of course there are underlying themes.
So if we deal with one issue, let's say, you know, an injured elbow.
Yeah.
But that theme carries through into finances, into...
Yes, and when you heal the elbow, you might find out your finances automatically change.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
You bet.
Thank you.
Sure.
Okay, Terry.
Hi, I think you've partly answered my question, Richard, but the question is, what if the anger I'm feeling is strictly towards myself? And
that means you didn't
that,
go... Yeah, go ahead.
I feel that through other processes, I've really let go of any other anger that I have.
Mm-hmm.
And that... the only issue I have with anger is probably towards myself.
Well, I'm always very suspicious of that, to be honest with you, because no child starts off angry at themselves, and I know you've done a lot of processing, but if you've been unable to release that anger to yourself, it's possible that you didn't finish the remorse and forgiveness and self-love steps, or it's possible that there's still, you know, more residual anger that hasn't been released yet, but you'd like to think it has, because, you know, who wants to keep going back there and dealing with it, right?
Right.
So you can try to go back and see if there's more on the particular issues and go back into the child, adolescent, or whatever age you were when it happened, and then try going through the insight and the remorse and the forgiveness and see where it takes you. But the definition of humility, as I understand it, and I have to remind myself of this all the time too, is the willingness to feel things as if for the first time or experience life for the first time. So humility is seeing the sunset and going, oh my God, look at that sunset, even though I've seen 1,000 of them. That's humility. And the humility, when you've already done the processing, all right, I've done this so many times, I'm blue in the face, but what can I learn this time that I didn't know before? What can I discover now? And as you do these steps and ask yourself the questions, and maybe there's something else to process and release before you just take the compassion with yourself and go through the remorse. Or maybe you didn't finish the remorse. It's possible that you have a lot of anger toward yourself for having done that, and that takes you straight into remorse. Oh my God, I really hurt myself this time. I really screwed up my life in this way. And then take that right into the forgiveness. And that may take you through the other side. Because if you really did the relief stuff on the others and you don't have any charge there, then you might want to just go from insight, remorse, and forgiveness right there.
Okay. Thank you.
You bet. Okay. So let's go back to Orion.
Okay. Hold on 1 second. Okay. Go ahead, Orion.
Hi. Thank you. And I'd just like to say I've really enjoyed all your explanations.
Oh, good.
Okay. Should I just start talking, or do you want to leave me?
Yeah, let's... Okay, what's the condition was, like a muscular dystrophy?
Well, you know, that diagnosis was reversed as a toddler,
right.
But I've had muscular weakness. I've had...
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, let's just call it muscular weakness. We can go into details later.
Yeah, there's also been the muscular tightness in the recent couple of years, so tight that it feels like it's trying to pull itself off the bone. It's kind of a myotonia sort of a thing.
Okay, we don't need to go into the medical terms, but we just want to go with the tightness that feels like it's pulling off the bone.
Yeah, and then lack of coordination in younger years too.
Okay. So since you've already done this, we can just kind of walk through this a little more quickly. So what emotions were there?
Okay, so foreboding was a big one. And unconfident, unreliability, not being able to count on the ability to do things without hurting myself.
Got it. And what did you find when you looked at the imaginary physiology or the imaginary condition, the cartoon? Or
yeah, what came up for me then was it was like all my structure was just kind of dissolving into gelatin or something.
Okay.
It's not always, but it just, without warning, you know.
Yeah, so.
Like, I've been crippled for 5 years on a wheelchair, and I've been athletic since then, and I'm facing disability again.
Wow. So, and this is since you were an infant.
Yeah, I was born without, you know how babies move their limbs. I didn't move my limbs at all, and I did not learn to walk till I was 2, and I didn't learn to crawl till after that.
Wow. So that's really set you back a lot.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, this may be one of those times where it really isn't going to fit, but let's just give it a shot anyway.
Okay.
So when you think of your home growing up, was there any sense of foreboding, of things being really tight?
The only time I can think of is like, you know, I had troubles with continence as a child going to elementary school and foreboding because now I've peed my pants or whatever.
So there's humiliation going on, too.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like there was an atmosphere in the home of not being able to count on or or falling apart or not being reliable?
Well, I know that at times, like I think my parents were so overwhelmed with so many kids that I just got forgotten a lot. And
I think we're there. I think that's really what it's going to be, because here are parents who are so overwhelmed, right?
Mm-hmm.
That the unreliability of being able to count on, right?
Yeah.
So here's some of your words: unreliability, can't count on the ability. Well, can't count on getting the care, right?
Right.
And then maybe, and the foreboding that here I am, and I don't know if they're coming for me, right?
Okay.
And so maybe there was a sense of insecurity. I don't know if this makes sense or I'm putting words out to you, but this is kind of what I'm seeing as a theme, because if the parents are overwhelmed, then how can you count on them? How can you feel that there's a sense of reliability?
Right.
And that tightness and that lack of coordination, like, will this really happen? And it's pulling you. No, and I think if you explore that whole...
What did you just say now?
Well, I was reading your words about tightness pulling off the bone, lack of coordination. It's like, well, was the house well coordinated? You know, was this tightness going on in the house?
Okay.
And the tightness of feeling like, well, things aren't right. It's just too much to do. We're overwhelmed. And so you have this unconfident, this sense of unreliability. I can't count on them. You know? And,
right.
And that here you are, this fragile thing, and you're dissolving into gelatin, right?
Mm-hmm.
But here you are, this fragile thing, and you can't count on. And so it may be that this was pre-birth, the decision on some level to say, I will express the pain of the house.
The pain of the house. Oh.
Yes, the pain of the family, the pain of the household. I will take that on to express it. I will be dissolving into gelatin. I will have this tightness and lack of coordination and this sense of foreboding and unconfident and unreliable that I can't count on, you know, them to do things and you know, without hurting me. Right?
Okay.
And so that foreboding in the house that you're just not going to get what you need, right?
Mm-hmm.
That would be a theme that I would play with.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense.
You got to learn to kind of, see, in this class, what I feel like I'm doing is I'm sort of teaching people how to think. How to think in a different kind of way than we're accustomed to. To just put the pieces together with what you have and to think it through.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. All right. It's always satisfying to cover a mystery.
Okay, I think we might have a question. There's a hand up. Yelena? Did you have a question, Yelena?
My apologies. I have some technical difficulties today.
Okay.
Okay.
We have another hand up, too.
Ksenia? Is it Ksenia? No? Okay.
Wait, I'm here. I'm sorry. I'm here.
Okay, good.
I muted myself.
Oh, you're muted. All right.
Richard, when we went through and we discussed emotions,
mm-hmm.
and for some reason, for the past probably a year, the emotions that I work with and with myself or other people, the primary emotion that would underline everything that I have noticed was fear.
Yeah.
And when you talked about fear, you said this is not an underlying emotion. The underlying is the anger.
Or the hurt or the other feelings that come along with it, yes.
So in what you're saying is the fear is that the effect of suppressed anger or hurt.
Generally,
fear
yeah.
comes. So I mean, fear comes after that.
Think about it for a moment. If if you're afraid they're going to shoot you, you know, yes, they may, and they could hurt you doing that. But there'd be a lot of anger that they would shoot you, and that could cause a lot of hurt. So whenever you break down the fear, what are the emotions that you're projecting that that fear holds? So if you process the emotions that are holding the fear together, then it can dissolve the fear.
Well, can you just, if I give an example, would that be possible? Because I'm having a hard time understanding.
Okay, good.
So let's say fear of rejection. For example, I've been prematurely born. My mother had to give me to ICU units so that they can tend to me, right? So she, at that moment, abandoned me or rejected me in my mind, of course, as a child. My mother abandoned me or rejected me. And it placed fear in me that I have been rejected or abandoned by my mother, and I won't see her again.
Right.
So then you project
that fear into your future and expect other people to reject you, right?
Okay, yes.
So how does it feel to be rejected?
Good question.
Once you're rejected, you're not afraid they're going to reject you anymore, are you?
Okay, so once you are rejected,
then you're really hurt.
Okay.
Right? And you're angry.
Yes.
Okay, well, so deal with the hurt and the anger.
Okay, not the fear itself.
No, the fear isn't going to go anywhere. The fear is like a tunnel. You know, you just keep going deeper and deeper into the tunnel of fear, but it doesn't really get you through anywhere new. What you want to do is you want to deal with the emotions that the fear would cause. And so when you're feeling this fear of rejection, or I'll put it another way, when you are feeling rejected, how well do you treat yourself? You don't treat yourself well at all. In fact, you end up rejecting yourself.
Yes, of course. So you basically, it's not fear, it's what you fear the most comes to you. So I got it. Okay.
Yeah, and so you translate the fear into something you can work with.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You bet.
Okay, let's hear from Penny.
Hi, how are you?
Doing great.
I think more than a question, it's a comment. I think what just happened with Orion was profound. And I think, I guess this is just my feeling about this, you've taken something that seemed to be so complex and have simplified it so that without having any background in counseling or psychology or anything else, you can bring a person to look at something simply. It doesn't have to be complicated.
Exactly.
It just gets in our way to
be complicated.
And that is profound. And I thank you very much for doing this, because I think we all go through our lives trying to figure stuff out, and we don't have the tools, and this is such a remarkable tool. Thank you.
You're very welcome. You know, in the last class I taught, Devin will remember, one of the guys said he was a psychotherapist for X number of years, and he said, I didn't have to learn all that other stuff in college, I just needed this course.
I could believe that.
Because it's just so direct. It just gets there, and you start to see the symptoms shift. And that's what's so completely amazing about it, is people have complicated things so much. But our higher consciousness is wanting to communicate to us through our reality. It's wanting to express what we are suppressing and wanting us to heal and get back to the love again. And if we just learn how to listen to the messages that it's giving, we can come through to the other side and create something totally new.
Absolutely. The time is right.
Exactly.
Yeah. Thank you, Richard.
You're very welcome.
Okay, we have another hand. Orion.
It's me. It's Donna.
Oh.
Donna.
I'm Orion's mother.
Okay, good.
I wanted to ask you a question. The person that I worked with has a profound medical condition, and as we went through the questions, it was very hard to get any emotion, and he acknowledged himself that he really didn't feel much emotion. However, it was towards the end when two things came up about which he had some emotion. And I wondered, and I spoke to him about it afterwards, and I said, is it possible that this is where the problem lies? And he acknowledged that it probably was.
Mm-hmm.
So now, but when I went through, you know, listing everything at the end, none of it meant anything because there was no emotion. It's almost like I need to go back through the questions again.
Well, here's the deal, is that some people may be so emotionally shut down that it's kind of like they're a little bit beyond the boundaries of what we can effectively work on. They need to bring something to the table of their own willingness to think and to feel.
Well, I certainly felt that that happened after we stumbled on these two.
Okay. Well, what happens is when you hit the exact thing, they need to quiet themselves, put them physically and emotionally back inside their body and feel those emotions inside their body and let that emotion build. Because when you pay attention to your body sensation, the emotion can come through more fully.
So is it possible, like if they did that, that they might then go back through the process and feel more emotion about the questions that we asked?
Of course.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, there are certain limits to the system, and one of the limits is if a person's not willing to feel emotion, it's really hard to work with that. Or if a person can't remember the past, or, you know, there's certain things where it kind of draws on its own self-limiting aspects. And that's one of the ones that... It doesn't mean that, you know, they can't be worked with and help to heal and move past it, but it's very important to just see how much you can help a person go there.
Yeah, to feel those emotions.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah. Thank you.
You bet. Well, do we have any
more? Okay, we have one more, yeah.
Okay, good.
Diane?
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
Hello?
Yeah.
Hi. I was just calling because in the process, while I was being asked the questions, I really connected to the emotions.
Mm-hmm.
But now I didn't write them down, right, because I was in the process.
Right.
And I kind of would like to have...
Yeah, you'd want to get all those responses. And that's a really good point that you're bringing up that I should have thought about months ago, which is that person should be able to get you the list. And if you remember who that is, we can have them email it to you or something.
Yeah, that would be great. I do remember who it is.
Good.
Should I tell you now should I?
Yeah, you can go ahead.
Okay, it's Terry.
Terry with a T?
Yes.
Okay.
She would like mine. I would get her email too. What she told me. Mm-hmm.
Great.
Okay.
Yeah, well, this is a really good thing to do. And I always hand the list to the person I'm working on when I'm, you know, once I've gone through it, I usually hand them the list and say, you know, looks like you're feeling these emotions in your body now. And they look at the list and they stare up and down it. Sometimes it's like 30 or 40 or more replies, and every one has been checked off. Like, wow, it's just a fit. And then when they kind of grok it and get the idea, wow, I am transferring all these feelings into my health that I'm not dealing with emotionally. And when you get them out of your health and you get them into the emotions, then the magic happens. Okay.
Okay, we have one more hand raised. Karen?
Yes, hi, Devin. I just wanted to ask again because this is a technical issue. I still don't have the notes, and I don't have your email address, and I don't have a password.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Okay. What's your last name, Karen?
Patterson.
Okay, I'll get that to you right away.
Okay, thanks so much. I
Sorry
really
about that.
Have enjoyed this. This is just so... just exactly what I've needed to learn on so many levels.
Yeah, I really have been amazed at how well people have been able to utilize this material and really make big changes in their lives and their health and everything else.
This is just absolutely amazing. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. So... looks like we have no hands raised at the moment. If anybody else wants to talk about any of the processes or what we're going to be working with, talk about your homework assignment tonight, which is to, your homework, by the way, before we meet tomorrow, is do the entire process, if you can. See how far you can get through it. And I'd love to see all of you, you know, doing the work. It was kind of interesting in a class I taught recently where, you know, at the time of the class and everybody's calling, saying, oh my God, it's an amazing process and it's helped me so much already. One woman called up at the very end and she said, I haven't done any of the exercises. Oh, really? She said, no, I don't want to do the exercises. Okay. Why is that? Well, I don't want to do them. Okay, well, you don't have to. And she realized that the minute she's ready, she'll do them. But right now, she doesn't want to. And I praised her. I said, that is such an empowered position to be in. Because it's not like you're saying you can't or that you won't. You're saying you choose not to right now. And the minute she changes her mind, she can do it. But for whatever reasons, she's choosing to be the outsider, saying, I'm not going to go there right now. Okay. But she has the tools. And that's my main goal, is to give you these tools and give them to you so well and get you confident at using these tools that you can affect these totally remarkable changes like the ones that Deanna was talking about earlier, you know, working with herself and getting the pain out of her back or helping the woman who had the recurring cancers get rid of the cancer. It's like, you know, 2 weeks and you're going to die kind of cancer to no trace of it there anymore in short order. That stuff is so completely remarkable. And that's why we're looking to document this stuff medically to show a different kind of psychosomatic health. Because if we have the ability to make ourselves sick, certainly we also have the ability to make ourselves well. Just have to learn how to do it. Looks like we have another hand raised.
Okay. Ava, go ahead.
Yes. Hi, I had just one question. We're going to keep doing this and do the homework and do the exercises. But if at the end, having a really complicated issue, we find that we can't do it, is there a way or somebody or yourself that we could ask to put us back on the track and continue to work on it?
I think what's happening is we've got a bunch of self-created health instructors, and a lot of people are going to become self-created health coaches, and there's all the people in the class who can help out too. Mm-hmm. And what you see is that you work with this stuff, the insights will continue coming, and we also have two more sessions of this class to work with as well.
Okay.
And you'll get a
great
mailing list of people, and there's an enormous amount of support here for everybody.
So I was just thinking that, you know, because it really sounds like it's really the best possible thing that we could do. It's great, but, you know, don't want to abandon it if it didn't work, so to continue with it.
Well,
want to make sure that,
yeah,
because I'm sure that it could work if we stick with it.
Yeah, it does work. The deal is, it's always painful and hard to want to see your blind spots, because your blind spots are by definition invisible. You've made them invisible. And everybody has their areas of strength and weakness, and these are ones where we've been hiding. And
it's funny that you say that, because this is exactly my problem. Blind,
yeah,
spots. I'm going blind.
Wow. Yeah. And so how are you going to see what you're not seeing, right?
Right.
And
I don't
when
see it.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm losing my vision. I'm losing my sight.
So wouldn't that be exciting to turn that around?
That would be.
Yeah.
I was always dreaming. My bigger ambition was that if I can do it for myself, maybe I can do it for other people, because so
right.
many people and so much suffering with this. So it's funny you said that, the blind spot, because you clicked right into the spot problem.
I get lucky sometimes.
So we'll work very hard with it. And then
good.
At the
good.
End, we still, if we need more, there will be more help.
Yeah, there's lots and lots of help there, for sure.
That's great. Thank you.
Good.
Okay, Benti?
Yes, I have a question about when you don't remember, for instance, your childhood,
mm-hmm.
And you know it's something that you're not aware of now,
yeah.
How do you do that?
I don't know. I don't have all the answers. I think
just one, because I've been working. I was abused when I was a child.
Okay,
and
but
I'm
do you know who abused you?
Yes.
And you know somewhat how they did it. So
now
you have a.
No, I don't know how they did it, but I just know.
Okay.
Who.
Well, then, but you know you have the emotion about the abuse.
I don't remember that, no.
Okay. Then how do you know you were abused?
No, because there was somebody told me that, and there has been a lot of people working on me to be able to release what is holding me back from releasing it.
How did they know you were abused?
They read my energy.
How do you know they did it right?
I don't know that.
Well, I don't either. And so I don't make any assumptions with this work.
No?
No, I don't make any assumptions at all, because some people I've met who can read energy really well, and most
mm-hmm.
people I've met don't read energy well at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would look to see what your own emotional set is, all the emotions you do know of that you have, and the conditions
mm-hmm.
that you know of that you have, and start working with what is known, and not trying
okay.
to fit something in that is unknown. Unless you really feel that you've been abused,
mm-hmm.
then it's a real emotion, and you need to process it. But if you don't know it and you don't remember it, don't even go there. But
okay,
if,
so I just work on what I know about now?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Work with what you have in front of you, because the reality will show you everything you need to know. You don't have to dig up stuff that you don't know, because how are we going to work on something we don't know? That's just very hard.
Yeah, no, I know it. But that's why I asked it. But that's
excellent.
Okay. Then I thank you.
Yeah, you bet. Sure.
Haro?
Yeah, thank you. I was just reflecting on step three again, the inside.
Yes.
Is it like I'm doing this to me, you know, from the beginning? So it's my fault from the beginning, and then, you know, how I treated me, then someone else treated me like that, and now I keep on treating myself like that? Or
well,
what was first?
It's sort of like that. Let's kind of walk through a little bit more carefully.
Mm-hmm.
First, somebody did it to you, and
okay.
then you got really hurt or angry or upset about it. and you released all that emotion about them. And then in retrospect, later, you go, oh my God, I end up doing that to myself too. After it's happened to you a lot of times, now you end up treating yourself that way. Your children or somebody, your husband or somebody, you end up doing it to them, but mostly you're doing it to you.
After that happened to me from another person.
From long time ago, now you end up, you know, if somebody put you in a prison, you're putting yourself in a prison now.
Okay.
And, you know, and you're the one holding the key, but you're still keeping the door shut. And that's what you forgive yourself about when you have the insight, oh, my God, yes, he really hurt me back then. She really hurt me, but now I'm the one doing it to myself.
Yeah, so I'm the one who's kind of repeating it all the time.
Yeah, and that, and then when you get that insight, you know, you bring in the compassion and the remorse.
Yeah, okay,
Yeah, that's when you dive in. I really hurt myself. But if you jump into that ahead of time before the release, total destructive. And this is part of the whole thing of coming up with this process was I kept seeing all these different processes that all looked like they had good things in them, but everyone felt wrong. And I could start tearing them each apart and going, well, this is really great, but, you know, it's missing this other, it's not complete. And then all of a sudden, after thinking about this for years, one day I said, oh, I see, they all fit together like this. And once you see how they fit together, you can't imagine them fitting together any other way. Of course it's discovery, release, insight, remorse, forgiveness, and so forth, and the love that follows. It has to be. There's no other order it could be in. You have to know what the issue is and then release it. And then you can have the insight. And then that leads to the remorse. But it's
always that it was done to us first from, you know, from another person or whatever.
Well,
and then,
how many babies were mean to themselves growing up? Never. Never happened. So this is what we learned, and this is how we end up harming ourselves.
Thank you.
You bet, sure.
Okay, Jyoti?
Yes, I have a question about on step 7, like the two different variations of Ho'oponopono.
Yeah.
So the first one is, I'm sorry, please forgive me, and the other self also says the same, I'm sorry, please forgive me. What is the second variation?
Let's walk it through again. I got confused when I was doing it, so let me just kind of walk it through. You start off saying, I'm sorry, please forgive me, I love you. That's one. Then you're saying that back and forth to the other self, over and over and over again, just slowly and carefully. I'm sorry, please forgive me, I love you. And then when you feel ready, it could be after 3 minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever you feel ready, or just take a chance if you don't feel ready, say to the other, I forgive you, I love you. And the other one is, she's saying back to you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, I love you. And you're saying back to her, I forgive you, I love you. And you keep doing it that way for a while. And she's still saying, I'm sorry, please forgive me, I love you. And you're saying, I forgive you, I love you. And then you'll feel that shift, and the other, and you're saying, I forgive you, I love you. And she's saying, I forgive you, I love you. And you're saying it again. And she's saying it again. You're going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. I forgive you, I love you, I forgive you, I love you. And that just becomes, I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you. So it's like three steps.
Perfect. Now I got it. Thank you so much.
Sorry, I didn't say it very clear the first time. Yes.
Okay, we have John.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Very clearly.
Okay. The question is this. If a person, even if it's yourself, is it possible for them to have more than one problem at the same time, or, you know, something so tightly wound into the other one to go through this process of releasing it, you know, once for each problem, or is it pretty much tied up with one problem and that's it, and then you'd have to find another therapy or whatever you'd call it?
I haven't really found this to be a problem, because when a person describes a series of symptoms, usually one issue comes up. And so it's been pretty straightforward. And if a person has another entirely different condition, maybe you'll find another completely different story showing up as well. Or it could be a variation on the first story. You know, we just have to take it as it is. We can't really make generalizations, say it's always going to be some way or another. But that's not really been a problem so far.
Okay. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Okay, Dorian.
Yes, hi. I just was also in the vein of an earlier question about getting a copy of the notes from my partner, who was Allison. I'd like to get that copy, and if she would be interested in the notes that I, you know, the answer, the questions that I took, I'd be happy to exchange that with her.
That's a very good idea. And
okay.
Devin, maybe you can
got
figure
it.
Out a way for people to connect with their partners and share their notes.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, Becky.
Hi, I have a question about what are people calling this who are currently using it, since it doesn't quite fall under the umbrella of quantum touch?
Well, this is called self-created health.
So people are advertising it as that
yeah,
are quantum
touch?
Yeah,
so we're probably going to have self-created health coaches in time, where we'll have a certification for people to become self-created health coaches.
Okay.
And what we've done is we realized that, you know, before people take like the level 2 quantum touch class, they've got to take the level 1 class. That makes sense. But this does not have a prerequisite, because it doesn't require that people have done any energy healing at all. And what I'm suspecting in the future is that a lot of people are going to come to quantum touch because they've discovered self-created health, and a lot of people come to self-created health because they've discovered quantum touch. And many of us have been working to try to find the overlapping areas where we can use the quantum touch and the self-created health in conjunction with each other. But that's still something we're working out. And one day I should have a lot to say on the matter. But right now, we're still exploring it and finding there is areas of overlap.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Okay, Natalie?
I was just wondering, because particularly for my issue, I did get some relief just from recognizing the emotions.
Yes.
And, of course, I want to go through the whole process, but
right.
If clients, you know, if you have that kind of release, I'm sure it's still beneficial to go through the whole process, but I'm just wondering, is there ever a situation where people don't, you know,
well,
if
yeah.
they get relief early? And
well, no, actually, you know. The relief is just your higher self talking to you, saying, okay, you've got your finger on the dial. You're able to tune the radio station. Now let's get busy and do the real work.
Okay.
Because
yeah.
the relief is not going to last. I don't mean to put
right.
negative affirmation on it. It's just a whisper from your higher consciousness saying, yeah, you got your finger on the pulse here. Now go ahead and do the work.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like it's going to last, but I was just wondering.
No, it probably won't last, but it is relief,
yeah.
and it's a positive sign that you've moved in the right direction.
Got it. Okay, cool. Thank you.
Welcome.
James?
Yes, good evening. I'm glad that we brought up a moment ago how self-created coach may lead to quantum touch. In my case, quantum touch has indeed led to self-created coach. I do have I have the information here to access the class notes. I have the password and the login. I do have one question, though. One of the participants earlier said something about, made reference to this morning, and I tuned in at 5 Eastern Standard Time. Did I miss something this morning that I need to be aware of?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. this morning I covered how to find the emotional causes. So that was like steps one, you know, basically step one, which is what we did this morning. And it'll be on audio and you can listen to it, and it's really valuable. It's essential, actually. You got to follow the steps in order to get it to work.
Okay. And to access the audio, what is the step to that, please?
It's the same link as the notes, and that will be available probably at least by Wednesday.
Okay, great.
But
yeah,
we'll email you to let you know when it's available.
Good.
And also in the notes, it has the discovery questions that we used to help find emotional cause. And even though it's kind of in shorthand, you know, you can make some sense of it.
Very good. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Okay, Gillette?
Actually, it's Pam. I'm here with Gillette.
Okay.
Oh, Gillette.
Yes. You said, Richard, that in the future you will talk more about how they're related, quantum touch, and you're just doing some experimenting now. But I'm wondering if you'll tell us the things that you have discovered. I've discovered a couple things of how they work well together, and that's really what my interest is, the emotional release with the quantum touch.
You know, it's funny because I'm not really accessing the insights right now in my head. But
okay.
I know that we've been coming up with some things. Okay, well, for instance, this may seem a little silly almost, but my cat was incredibly needy. She was a rescue kitten. And she just had to crawl all over me all the time and constantly get attention. And so I was counseling a friend who wanted to do his therapy his way, and I was suggesting he go into the past and do some healing in the past. And he refused that idea, thinking, well, I don't want to change the past, even though he's changing it every time he remembers it. But what I did was I went into the past where I recognized the cat had a problem. And so just like going back into the past and doing a meditation, I went back and saw her happily with mommy, and then I saw her being bottle fed. So I picked her up in a meditation using level 2 work, and put her back with mommy again and ran a lot of energy into that other past, that new past, I should call it.
Yeah.
And when I came home, she was totally comfortable sitting on the other side of the room and spending hours alone and hasn't really been overly needy. She likes to cuddle sometimes, but that's not coming from overly neediness. So, you know, you start to see how you can work with the emotional stuff and the energy stuff at once.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I've been finding, and it's just so fascinating to me, and so I'm sort of curious if anybody else is experiencing this, is if I do the emotional release work first with a client, and then you sort of identify what are those main sort of negative vibrations or negative emotions that sort of encompass the hologram, then I find what are the opposite vibrations through some kinesiology and muscle testing. And then when I'm doing QT on them, I might start with love and gratitude. But if I start to feel like, say, it's humiliation was part of their picture, and so feeling honored, if I start to feel honored myself, you know, like what does it feel like to feel honored? Because that's the new vibration that they need. It's like 10 times more powerful than if I'm just doing love and gratitude.
So you actually tap in on the emotion that they're needing and run that energy.
Yes, yes.
Wow,
exactly.
I love it. You know, this is the insights and the variations we're coming up with, and this is exactly what we're looking for, is the new ways of working.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. That's fantastic.
Okay, let's hear from Judy.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
I have one comment and another question.
Sure.
The comment is based on what we've been talking about now about the chronology of quantum touch. And as an instructor of the level 1 and level 2 work, and now learning this self-created health, Whether or not it was intentional, Richard, I think the structure is brilliant, because what I see from the people that take Quantum Touch, and many of the students I have are completely new to energy work. And so getting involved with the rudimentary Quantum Touch Level 1 work really kind of awakens these people, or probably more accurately, reawakens them mm-hmm. to that part of their beingness that they've actually dumbed down so much by living in this physical world. And once they have that familiarity and they move into the Level 2 work, then it's like they've graduated and taken off the training wheel, so to speak. And now that they understand that body sensation of what they are, then the flow happens more seamlessly. And I think only until that happens are people maybe, and it's my maybe, rather brave enough to now look at these very scary emotions that have been buried down there. So thank you for this chronology. I think it's brilliant, and I can see how it's unraveling in exactly the way it was intended, at least maybe from your higher self.
It could easily be. I really believe that the self-created health is my most profound discovery, and I think mm-hmm. that the Level 2 is the one that could change the paradigm of reality.
Right, and it seems like it unlocked in just the right order from my perspective.
Yeah.
So that's my comment, but my question is more of a request. Before we end today, will you be able to do a synopsis of the whole process, possibly using... a hypothetical, so we can see how all of these steps weave together a little more seamlessly?
Sure, we can do that right now.
Great, thank you.
Yeah, let's see how this is coming here. We have one hand raised, and then after this hand, I'll just kind of walk it through a little bit.
Okay, Annie?
Thank you. I also have done Quantum 1 and 2, and this is absolutely beautiful.
Thank you.
Ultimately, Richard, is a time frame for one of these. I do weekly healing sessions for those people that want to stop in for mm-hmm. whatever's killing them, and I would like to start introducing this to help some people.
Well, here's what I see, is that usually you're talking 15, 20 minutes to find emotional cause. Sometimes it can be much shorter than that. Occasionally it could be longer than that, but maybe, 10 minutes to 30 minutes is a good, range to find emotional cause. Then explaining to a person the homework that they need to do to start processing those emotions, that can take another 30 minutes or 40 minutes to give them some homework. And then if they choose to do the homework away from you, then that's great. And then when they come back, you can work it out and give them some more homework. And what I mean by homework is the work that takes you home spiritually, the things that bring you back to yourself. So you, or some people just have the person there. Now, it could take 2 or 3 hours to do a full process.
Okay.
And, I'd say generally an hour and a half would be a good amount of time to put in on it. But sometimes it's going to take a lot longer than that because maybe they need to release hurt a couple times, and they need to really do some major anger release sessions before they're ready.
Okay.
And there's no exact time frame on this stuff.
Right. So, but plan on at least 2 to 3 sessions.
I think 2 sessions or 3 sessions would be adequate for most people. And if a person can change a major health pattern in 2 or 3 sessions and feel the gratitude of being in charge of their life again, and that's pretty good stuff.
Okay, that's perfect. And now, have you ever tried the self-created health on distant healing?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
But I really think that when you do the process, it changes everything automatically. When you do the emotional process, there used to be somebody in my life who would try to make me feel guilty all the time. And when I did the emotional process on it, I was around her, and she stopped trying to make me feel guilty. It was the weirdest thing, because I saw her trying to do it to other people, but not to me.
Okay. When you were talking about your cat, that's what brought it to mind. Was there? I've got some people that have got, you know, family members that are clear across the country. So I'm going to attempt this, you know, using the emotional clearing.
Well, here's the thing. You can do it. You can help them with the emotional causes using the phone or Skype like I'm doing today.
Mm-hmm.
And then they can do the emotional processing on their own, or you can do some hand-holding with them and just be there with them when they're doing it. The woman with depression I was talking about, it was her second session, and they were holding her hand, metaphorically speaking, sitting there with her saying, "No, darling, you can do this." You go, "Oh, no, it's too painful. I can't forgive this. You know, I feel so much remorse." "No, you can do this. You can do this. We're here with you." And she does, and she just tries saying the words of Ho'oponopono, and then all of a sudden, after about 8 or 10 minutes, she goes, "Oh, my God, I can do this." And she pops out the other side. So sometimes it really does take just being there with a person and adoring them and letting things shift.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. So, got one other hand raised. Let's take that one, and then we'll actually a couple other hands. I still want to walk through a process. Okay. What do you think, Devin?
It's up to you. The process usually doesn't take more than 20 minutes, right?
Actually, it won't even take very long at all. I'll just kind of walk it through really quickly. What happens is somebody's got an emotional issue. I mean, a physical issue. It could be an emotional issue. Then you don't, you know, and then you just work through the questions like we did. You know, when did it begin? What are the symptoms, et cetera? And you get a series of answers that point to a specific situation that they didn't want to feel. So when I would work with a person, I'd say, well, what do you do with a set of emotions? When we finally figured out what the issue was, like say it was, you know, their father or their ex, usually it's something big like that usually. And they say, well, those are the emotions I never want to feel, is the most common response I'd get when I ask a person. And then I hand them the list and say, maybe you're feeling these emotions in your body instead of feeling them as emotions. And you get this, oh, kind of look on their face like, oh, my God, that makes sense. I'm feeling them in my body instead of feeling them as emotions. That's the insight. I mean, that's the discovery, rather. The discovery that, aha, this whole set of information that I gave you about my symptoms are actually emotions I'm not feeling. Wow, that's a big one. Now, what's interesting is that you really can't do step two unless you finish step one. It's just you hit a wall. Because how do you know what to release if you haven't had the discovery? You have the discovery what the emotional cause is. Then you can do the release steps that we talked about of the anger, the hurt, the shame, the guilt, the fears, everything else. And you go through all that release of emotion, and a person just expresses, and gets it out of their system. Like we were saying, like Gestalt therapy, where you just feel a lot, yelling at a chair or whatever, you know, beating a pillow. And that gets it out of your system, so to speak, but it didn't finish it because it didn't deal with the other five steps. And the third one, of course, is the insight, realizing, wow, they mistreated me, and now I'm the one who mistreats me. And the odds are, if you don't fix it, you'll end up doing it to your kids and the people that you love. You'll abuse them in some way that they did it to you. Then the fourth step is, I mean, the third step is the insight, what I was just saying, was the third step where you realize you did it to yourself. And the fourth step is the remorse. And insight and remorse are really tied together because when you feel the insight, automatically you start feeling the remorse. It's just that I wanted it to be a separate step so you'd spend enough time at it so that you'd really appreciate that you need to spend 5 or 10 minutes seeing how deeply you can go into remorse. And it's sort of the thing that if somebody isn't really feeling remorse when they're saying they're sorry, you can pretty much bet they're going to do it again. But if somebody's feeling a lot of remorse when they're saying they're sorry, you can trust them that they've learned and they don't need to continue that pattern anymore because they've processed it. And that's what we're doing here. We're really feeling how deeply we've hurt ourselves and we care. Then from there, the forgiveness and the ho'opono. Ho'oponopono. I left out one of the ponos. That's no good. You do the ho'oponopono for the self-forgiveness. But now it has tremendous power behind it because you've got something huge to forgive yourself about. And you're also having this conversation with yourself where you're shifting it, letting it shift naturally. That turns into self-love. And the self-love, when you get there, for those of you who do, you'll see that it's overwhelming. You can't contain that much self-love. When I did it for the first time, I realized I was able to love myself as or more deeply than anything I've ever loved in my life. Anybody, anything, it was like overwhelming self-love. And I didn't even know that was possible. I always thought before that self-love was kind of like the booby prize. You know, it's like, oh, you know, if you can't, you know, love somebody else or whatever, then you just have to settle for just loving yourself. But it was actually one of the most beautiful experiences ever to feel that much self-love. And the self-love becomes so overwhelming that it cannot be contained anymore. And that's why I call it spiritual self-love. And it's all capitalized on the worksheet because you have taken it beyond anything that you could hold as just a person. And spiritual self-love. So that's kind of the walkthrough of the process. And it's pretty simple. It's pretty direct. It takes courage. It takes willingness. It's not for everybody. Not everybody's asking to grow. And this is for people who really do want to grow and want to have a transformative experience in their life and have a new life because, you know, this will actually change things. So there it is. That's a quick sort of outline and review of what we've covered. We got some other questions here.
Okay. Is this Pam?
Yes, it is. So I noticed that these notes are copyrighted. And so when we're giving somebody the homework, are we free to just kind of type up what you've written down, or do you sell
We don't have a package of anything to sell, but why don't you just give them the assignment of what they need to process emotionally, just, you know, like a homework assignment or something.
Just tell them.
Yeah, tell them to do and maybe, you know, type it in your own words or something, but, you know, it's good stuff. I mean, we haven't figured out these things, and I'm one of these anti-bureaucratic people, anti-administration, and I hate having to codify things, but Jennifer and staff will eventually figure it out, and we'll have something put together.
Okay, great, thanks.
You bet.
Okay, Jyoti?
Hey, yeah. This is a question about the discovery process.
Yes.
Like, for example, somebody is diagnosed with cancer, and they found out about it yesterday. How can you say that when did it begin, you know?
Okay, well, here's the deal. If somebody is diagnosed with cancer, what emotions do you think they might be feeling?
I don't know.
Well, come on, you can take a guess.
Rejection?
Well, yeah, I mean, they could be feeling a lot of emotions, but you realize they may feel that they could die, right?
Okay.
And that's pretty strong emotion. And when you have somebody with really strong emotions and judgments and fears and angers and hurts and all the rest of the stuff, wow, the whole story just unfolds before your eyes. It's very, very easy to find in most cases what the story is about.
Okay, so you can continue from step three, I mean, like question three and go forward.
No, all the questions. Use all the questions. You don't just pick one of them. You got to use, you know, maybe questions 8 and 9, you don't have to use that often. But 1 through 7, you really need to use. And and then keep asking the questions over and over again. Keep pulling out as much information as you can, because sometimes it's only when you get a lot of information do you finally figure it out. So sometimes it's that one key word that will trigger the whole situation.
One keyword.
Well, you know, it could be a lot of keywords. It's just whatever you find, but you've got to be willing to do the investigation so you can make the discovery.
So it's like we have to work with the person to go back to the time when they actually planted that emotion started, which turned out to be this physical problem in their.
Well, they'll know when that is. So, you know, what you say is, you know, was there a situation around the time of X where you felt A, B, C, and D? And they'll say, oh yeah, it sounds like my relationship with my ex. Well, did you feel humiliated? Yes. Well, did you feel afraid? Yes. Did you feel like you couldn't stand up straight? Yes. Well, did you feel, you know, and you just say all the words back that they were saying, and then notice that they all fit. That's how we do it.
Yeah, but going back to the time, you cannot figure out going to that time duration when you're diagnosed yesterday.
No, here's the deal.
Okay.
Maybe you were diagnosed yesterday.
Okay.
So look for the period before you were diagnosed. It's not about yesterday. It's not about one little event. If it's something as big as your life is in danger, there's going to be a lot of huge emotional themes that are expressing themselves over and over again. Don't worry so much. This is going to show itself to you. And as you practice during this, you know, over the week, we're going to come back tomorrow. We're going to come back in another week from today. And you'll get to practice. You get to see what happens. And then you'll see this is really easy stuff.
Okay, thank you.
You bet, sure. Yeah, I think one of the things that I have to watch out for is that people don't try to complicate it, because it's like basic quantum touch in a way that, you know, people will say, well, can I do this when I'm wearing shoes, you know, or, you know, and it's like, no, you don't have to make it that complicated. Can I wear a necklace while I'm doing it? You know, it's like, of course you can do these things. And this is sort of how that is. You don't have to look that hard. You just have to look in the right places. And it'll all show up.
Okay, we have a question from Zuhair.
Hi, Richard, just a quick question, please,
yes.
With regards to the self-love, number 6, and, well, not so much 6, but I think number 7.
Right.
When you go into the Ho'oponopono.
Yeah.
I seem to have a problem because I've actually, this is my second workshop with Self-Created Health, and I've started to work with quite a few of my clients, you know, giving them homework to try and dig these problems out. I have had some success, but what I'm getting trouble on is, I think it's just an Indian subcontinent culture aspect, where we are very hard and we don't want to sit and say, I love you to myself.
That's a problem.
That is a big problem. And is there any other way around it?
Well, think about that. I think that way I might consider approaching it would be to realize that if you love God and you're a spark of the all that is, then you have to love yourself.
Okay.
You know, because if we're part of the infinite and the infinite is made of love and we're part of that infinite, then we need to love this part too. And so it just kind of rationalized myself into some kind of acceptance of the idea. And it doesn't mean that you're conceited or have a big head or something. It just means that this is just appropriate expression.
Yeah, ultimately.
And besides, when you forgive a child, this might be another way of explaining it. You say to the child, I forgive you. I love you. Right? Well, that's appropriate to say.
Very much. That's okay, yeah.
But we've made mistakes, and we can treat ourselves as if we were children.
Okay.
And we can say that back to ourselves and say, yeah, I messed up. I forgive you. I love you. Just as if we were someone else's child.
Yeah. I think those last three words are very difficult. I love you.
Exactly. Well, I'm just trying to find ways that it might go down a little easier.
Yeah. Of course. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, now we'll try that and see how that happens.
Okay, let me know how that works out.
Will do, definitely. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yeah. Wow, great. Okay.
Okay, we have James.
Yes, Richard. I have a question. I teach pre-K, and this year I have been gifted with two little ones that are extremely challenging and acting out. And when they are upset, they hit themselves in the forehead, and it makes it very difficult to work with
them.
Well,
yeah.
Okay. And
what I'm
wondering is from your vision of working with your little kitten,
mm-hmm.
and one of the other participants speaking about honoring, in her thoughts for that person, would that be something that I might be able to use with them, say, over the weekend and just thinking about each of those children?
I think you could certainly send energy with that effort in mind. My sense is that it might be useful, capital M, to talk to the parents and find out what's going on with them emotionally.
I have.
And what do you find
there?
That's
part of what I do. Well, we try to work together, and they are also at places where they, we need your help. And so I'm just thinking through this as I'm listening to the process, knowing that for a 3- and 4-year-old, which
mm-hmm.
is what they are,
yeah.
that it would have to be something that, yes, I tell them, I forgive you, I love you, I love you, you're safe here, but I just had that thought as I was listening, and I wanted to just say it out loud.
Yeah. I think that you can certainly try these things. And I had some experience years ago where I was working with a friend, and she was bringing me into the classroom with autistic children and learning handicapped kids and such. And one child was kicking and biting and really acting out. And we gave him a little healing session, and he fell asleep. And then when he woke up later, he apologized. And the teacher said, oh, it's so unlike you to be acting this way, because you're generally always so nice and you share toys. You're giving him all kinds of positive affirmation and reinforcing his identity. And he became this total sweetheart, and he was just really responding well and being intelligent. And then his mom showed up, and she grabbed his arm and snarled something about, did he eat his bologna sandwich today? And
yeah.
I thought, my God, if that was my mom, I would go autistic. I would just check out. I'd say, okay, I can't deal with this. This is too much. I'm leaving. I'm out of here. Like Cartman.
No, I mean, I do have those. We see that sometimes. I do see that.
Right.
But I can work with my little one in the room. And then as that begins to change, then at home it also begins to have a change, because the little one isn't acting like that. I mean, he does. It's both ways. Sometimes it's hard for us to see, that we're doing something because we have our little one's best interest at heart. Okay. Thank you for your comment, though. It's wonderful to hear that you have been in a classroom where there are children with autism where this has worked. So,
It's very powerful stuff, and it really needs to have a home environment that supports it.
Yeah. And so, all right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Yeah. So, do we have anybody else online here? We do.
Margaret?
Hi. Hi. I just wanted to ask a question because I have a friend who took an antibiotic and started having digestive issues. Would this work be able to help them?
Well, it's certainly worth doing the exploration and also taking lots of probiotics as they're healing their body.
They're actually a teenager, so they're kind of resistant to, you know, any adult saying something to them. So, but I thought maybe, you know, exploring these other things, maybe they might be interested, I don't know, where they don't have to take something because they're very resistant about taking more stuff, you know, because
It's just my recommendation with antibiotics is probiotics.
Yes. No, I understand
just,
that.
You know, reverse the damage.
Right.
And
but,
there's only so much I find. I mean, sometimes the energy will do such deep magic that it kind of reverses all the logic of the culture.
Yeah.
And other times, you know, I'm a big believer in healthy foods, exercise, emotional process, you know, the whole, you know, the spiritual connections, the everything. I want to do it all. I don't want to just say, hey, quantum and the energy work. You do everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just one or another. And people who just take a single, you know, approach are very much, in my opinion, limiting the scope of what they could be getting.
Okay. Well, I guess the thing is just to offer it as an option. You know, because she's at a point where she, you know, she has her own mind of how to deal with it, which isn't really that healthy because she continues to eat unhealthy foods and
exactly. And
stuff like that. But maybe there's more behind it why she's doing those things too. So I guess.
Well, that's the real issue, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, so if you can help her not try to get her to take probiotics, but help her to see what the real emotion is around this digestion thing, how is she digesting her emotions, how she's swallowing all her emotions and not processing that stuff, and how it makes her feel having the stuff, makes her feel like there's something really wrong with her or whatever it is. We're very common teenage to sort of feelings, aren't they?
Yeah, and she has become very reclusive and everything. So.
Yeah, and so which came first, the reclusiveness or the digestive problems?
The digestive problem.
Okay, but what came before the digestive problems?
She was actually a friend's child, and so she was actually having severe acne, which is, you know, I guess a result of the diet, so possibly.
And who is the most self-conscious in our culture? Teenagers.
Teenagers, yeah.
And so any skin problem, and, you know, I don't do paint by the numbers in this class, but just as a generalization, anything on the skin is about your self-image, right? Because that other people could potentially see it.
Yeah.
Well, who's the most self-conscious about their image? Teenagers.
Yeah, especially females.
Especially female teenagers.
Yeah.
And so now she has pimples, and now she has digestive problems. And because she's a teenager, she knows everything, and you can't tell her anything. So help her find the real emotional issues behind it, and let her know that when she starts getting those out of her system, she'll be able to be happier, more confident, and those symptoms will probably start disappearing.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, that's what I would probably aim at. Sure.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's hear from Jane.
Hi, I was reflecting on the question of the Indian gentleman.
Oh, yeah.
I was having similar questions myself.
Oh, okay.
And feeling as if once we get to that place of the self-love, the overwhelming self-love,
right.
It's not really self. I'm not sure whether I'd want to call it self-love anymore because it's a whole lot bigger than that.
Yeah, there's no word for it at that point. It's just overwhelming.
Yeah, and if we were to say, you know, I'm sorry, forgive me. By that time, we're moving down into the heart, and we love everything. It's not just I love, you know, I feel love for all might be a way.
It happens, but, you know, most people have experienced it as like, it's just an extension of the self-love where it just becomes overwhelming. And you realize that you are love.
Yeah, right.
And so,
to that point,
it's not
that hard to say.
It's self-love.
For some people.
Infinite love, whatever you want to call it, it starts going there. But I really recommend you try it out and see how you like it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, okay, it is 4:30 here. We still have a half an hour for any, you know, questions or discussion of any kind, because I've covered the material that I wanted to cover, and you have the techniques. If you have any other questions or comments, we're welcome to do it. This is all going to be recorded, so you can review this as often as you like, and get the information more clearly, because sometimes, you know, the words come by fast and you don't always hear it all. I know I don't when I'm learning new information. I think one of the things I really like about this work is that it's so direct and simple. And once you get it, it's really yours. And that's what my goal is in this time we have together, is that you get to completely own this work. Okay. So anybody else want to check in and continue the discussion? Otherwise, we could, you know, break, you know, 25 minutes early if no one else has anything they wanted to add or share or question about.
We have one person.
Oh, we do have.
Stephanie.
Yes, all right.
Hi, Richard.
Hi.
My question is that part of what I'm dealing with are issues of fatigue and a sense of being disconnected.
Mm-hmm.
And I've done a lot of work, you know, for decades, literally, and in some ways I'm more closed now than I often am. And find it difficult to stay present with myself. I actually fell asleep several times in this class, and I was the partner of Orion, and so also dealing with, you know, even though it seems like some of the stuff just goes back to 76, I know that a lot of it goes back to birth, pre-birth, and I suspect from what I know, I can see things going back in my lineage to ancestors and past lives and, you know, however you want to look at it. My concern is being able to stay with myself to do the work, because that's what I have found most difficult.
And so
difficult.
What I would recommend is you don't try to do it by yourself. You do it with help of somebody else. Because until you develop that strength, you know, of being able to hold the space for yourself, get some help. I'm sure there's plenty of people on this call who would love to help.
Okay, how am I to find them, I guess?
Well, we're going to share the entire mailing list, and you can just reach out to a bunch of, you know, try sending it to 5 people and say, hey, anybody want to help me try to find and work with my issues?
So I have a fairly good sense what the issues are, but it's like putting the whole package together and staying
present.
Well,
that's what you're asking for. You want to put the whole thing together, and who wants to help out?
And then it's like I can get to emotions, but then I don't feel like I'm really connected, even though I'm crying or I, you know, look angry or something, and, you know, somebody else would say I am. There's a sense of not feeling it on a deeper level?
I think that if we actually find a really solid emotional cause of issues, that you'll be a little more connected when you feel them.
Yeah, go ahead. I don't know what to say. I mean, like I said, I think I know, at least the best that I know. I know some of it, you know, like not being wanted and...
Yeah. You know, so these are the kind of issues you'll get to process. And a lot of people who have done years and years and years of processing, they're sometimes the hardest people to work with because they become convinced that no amount of processing will help them. And as a result, it's sometimes very challenging to get there because they've got to have the humility to dive into those places again and bring light to what was previously dark. And that's certainly a challenge to do. But by getting a little help and going in there, you can often just release it. So I really encourage you to see what you can do.
Yeah, it would be great. I mean, the hopeless helpless was, you know, part of my issue, and that goes back, I think, you know, to the womb.
Exactly. And the hopeless helpless is part of a martyr consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And so the way to stop it is to get out of all vibration of self-pity, of the unappreciated, misunderstood, overburdened, innocent of wrongdoing, angry at God, you know, the hopeless, helpless, and all those vibrations that everybody plays into from time to time. But to get out of those vibrations, because that will keep you from being able to succeed with any of this work. And it's actually, and no one wants to hear this, a choice. It's no more or less than a choice to stop the martyr or overt self-pity. It's a choice. It isn't a technique.
Let me ask, because you've just confused me, because I would think that these are the from, you know, your description of the process, these are the things to sink into, not the things to get beyond, to get to something else.
Okay, let's break that down for a moment, because you're bringing up a really good point. The hopeless helpless is usually a syndrome of martyr, which is a form of self-pity. So the hopeless helpless isn't really the issue that you're processing. It's what made you feel hopeless helpless that you're processing. So the person, people, situation that caused you to move into an identity of hopeless helpless, that's what we're going to be looking for. And when you do the processing, you can't be feeling hopeless, helpless while you're doing the processing, except to maybe feel the pain. But the actual processing needs you to be present. And that hopeless, helpless keeps the present from function, being functional.
Yeah, I'm doing my best to process this as you're saying it, and self-pity, you know, may be a blind spot for me, but it's not my normal experience.
Okay. Yeah, it's just that martyrhood is a different form of self-pity, and I was going to cover this tomorrow in more detail.
Because the martyr part for me is part of what's generational, you know, like having grandparents that went through the pogrom, and you know, there seem to be, I understand on a spiritual level, you know, how, you know, I could be the one creating everything.
Yes.
And I go in and out of, you know, being fully congruent with that stance. So, you know, it's like when I think back to things, I mean, my choice in life would be to be empowered and not be a victim.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
And that's, you know, what I work towards and do my best to help other people to work towards. And if you look at my life, I go in and out of that. And it's how to get enough and stay enough at a vibration that I can do the work on myself. Or, you know, I've been going for a long time to, you know, reach out to others, you know, doing things like taking this class,
mm-hmm.
to go, okay, you know, help me. But that is one of the inner voices I have in the womb. It's helped me, you know, get me out of here. You know, that goes all the way back there to, like, I need somebody external. And I've got the flip side, which I spent a lot of my life at, which is, you can't affect me at all.
Yeah,
that's
well,
a paradigm.
Yeah. It's a difficult position to be happy from. So my suggestion is try doing the processing as best you can, and let's take it tomorrow or next week and see where we can go with it.
Okay. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Yeah. Okay, we have no hands raised at the moment. If anybody wants to chime in, that's great. Yeah, we got some people.
Vatna? Oh, hello. Lots of love and gratitude to all. This is Fatma Noor from capital of Canada. I'm very thrilled to be with this group again, that we're listening and learning the simplest form of helping ourselves and others. I'm a lifelong learner, and I'm basically trained in so many different techniques, and trained, and I also use them with the purpose of always to find the most helpful, I should say, effective and efficient way of moving the client forward at their own speed. So over the years that I have used hypnosis, I no longer call it hypnotherapy because I'm a certified counselor, and there is a whole law is being brought around to be called therapist or practitioner, clinical practitioner, and so on. So this will be finalized in year 2013. But apart from that, I'm also a certified coach because I basically, deep down, believe that we are unlimited beings. So, and I respect laws, of course, but I respect myself to be unlimited. So I kept learning not to be limited with the techniques or titles and so on. I can assure you that this self-created health process is extremely effective, extremely efficient. Why I'm saying that, I have used various techniques that I can tell you, like hypnosis and timeline therapy. I incorporated it by Ted James, and they are all like well-known techniques. And the Gestalt healing, all VAK, visual, auditory, kinesthetic, trying to find the initial synthesizing event, and then collecting all the residual negative emotions, recognizing them, acknowledging them, honoring them, and then releasing them with the permission of our higher self, whether the person believes we're higher self or not. And then not stopping there and moving forward and filling the gap, if there's any gap, or whatever we released, with light or with something beneficial that clients decide, because not all of us are at the same place. So we are all different places and so on. So the ultimate to feel happy, joyful, loving towards ourselves and to others. And I can say that these steps, I don't know if there's any significance in the number 7, but I kind of, with my engineering background and so on, I'm also analytical. I mean, it is beautiful because it is simple and it is effective.
Yeah, yeah.
I am truly grateful that, I mean, I, of course, value the education. But if some paper should be given to all of us, whether we call ourselves counselor, therapist...
Well, here's what's going on right now. We're just looking. We're not even there yet. We're just looking at how we're going to put together a program of certified, self-created health coaches.
Absolutely beautiful. The idea is brilliant, and thank you for that.
Thank you. Appreciate all your good work.
Love you all. Thank you very much. I'm so honored to be with your presence. Thank you. Thank
you. That's great. So, Devin, how are we doing here?
I think we have one more.
Okay, good.
One more hand raised. And it's Bridget.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
I was wondering if you had any more suggestions on how to move from depression to actually feeling something underlying.
It can be very difficult because what happens is when a person's sufficiently depressed, it may be very hard for them to access their anger.
Right.
But if you can help somebody get to the anger, that can certainly help a lot. Depression is usually caused by layer after layer after layer after layer after layer after layer of little angers. And then all of a sudden, one tiny thing happens, and it's the straw that breaks the camel's back. They can't take it anymore. It's just too much. And so then they end up in this funk of depression. And maybe none of the anger seem big enough to deal with, but they're there. And the best way out of it is to release the anger. Now, depression can also be triggered by news. It could even be winning the lottery can trigger depression. Any sudden shift of expectations can cause a sudden depression. But that's not usually the real dangerous, long-lasting kind. The dangerous, long-lasting kind is when there's all these layers and layers of anger that have been piling up on top of each other and haven't been processed. That's when the real big stuff happens, and that's when a person really needs to see if they can tap in and get access to the power of their anger. You know, anger is a beautiful thing when it's expressed honestly, lovingly, and vulnerably. And or just by yourself. It's not like Star Wars where Darth Vader says, "Feel your anger, young Skywalker, and come over to the dark side of the Force." No, I was yelling at the screen practically saying, "No, feel your anger and come to the light side of the Force." Because inside that anger is so much love. The only reason you're angry is because you didn't get the love you wanted, right? You're not mm-hmm. angry just to be angry. You're angry because you weren't loved. So I was yelling at the screen. It didn't help any. Darth Vader didn't listen to me at all.
Okay. I'll give it a try.
Yeah.
Thank you. Be
patient, you know, because sometimes it's really hard to break down those layers.
Yeah, especially when it's been going on all your life.
Yeah, but maybe make a list of all the stuff in your life that have really pissed you off that you never dealt with. And maybe when you've got that big list sitting in front of you, you go, "Well, God damn it, I'm pissed," you know, and just really start letting it out.
I can't remember that far back. That's
well, there's anything. Well, how about 2 weeks ago, you know? How about, you know, personally, I get outraged at the 100 insults to the environment that aren't being even discussed in the political arena anymore.
Yeah.
You know, and the death of the planet and the poisoning of the kids, and I could go on for an hour or more, just listing the things, not even going into detail about how upsetting it is. But, you know, it's something I've got to process and keep moving through my system. Otherwise, I'll get stuck in that energy.
Yeah.
All right. Anyone else want to chime in before we sign off? Devin has some announcements, I'm sure, before the day is out.
I do.
Yeah, you always do.
Well, let's see. We're coming back together tomorrow morning at 10 to 12:30. You will be getting the replay again, hopefully Monday or Tuesday, but at the latest Wednesday. I believe I've emailed everybody with the notes and replay information. And if you still have not gotten that from me, please email me at devon@quantumtouch.com, and that's D-E-V-O-N. I think that's it.
That's it? You're not going to sing a goodbye song to everybody?
Let's all sing together. How about that?
What are we going to sing?
Kumbaya.
I was afraid you were going to say that. I think Bridget has her hand up.
Okay, hold on one second. Oh, no, Bridget's just still on mic.
Oh, still on mic.
She didn't raise her hand. She didn't raise her hand again.
Okay. Well, this has been a delight, everybody. I really appreciate it. Why don't we put everybody on speaker?
Okay, you're on.
Thank you very much. Love and light, Richard, and love and light, everyone.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you.
Thank you.
Devin, I'm waiting for you to sing.
Yeah, me too.
Kumbaya. Oh, my God, I'm so off-key. You don't want me to sing.
Yes, I do.
I just want to hear that off-key stuff.
Oh, my gosh, it's horrible. I'm going to go process it.
Thank you. Good night.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.